look at the issue of daylight savings and those kinds of things. And I find from legislative counsel that there aren't a great deal of options. However, I was told that this is not something that you get to vote on, that the states take it pretty much as it comes from the federal law. However, in yesterday's New York Times, under the national page, the item under Indiana lawmakers vote to study the time changes. Now, and this is somewhat anecdotal, and we'll be able to gather some more information as needed. And colleagues, I would like you to take this just as seriously as you possibly can. And that is, I think that the worst thing that could happen out of 3303 would be we do absolutely nothing and walk away from any examination of our time zones in the state of Oregon. But the best thing that might be able to happen relative to House Bill 3303 is that we at least come back and examine and question ourselves, what is it that we're doing? Because the email and the other communications that I received relative to examining our time zones within the state of Oregon came in about 10 to 1 in favor in the western portion of Oregon, that portion of Oregon which is under the Pacific time zone, to do something about the spring forward and fall back issue. Now, if I was given my way and I really believed that we would seriously consider to do it, consider doing it, back when we were trying to truly save energy under the spring forward, fall back daylight savings program, that's when we moved for a longer period of time to the daylight savings than what we were previously accustomed to doing. Today it's 6 months on, 6 months off, basically. And I think, again, if you stopped and really examined it, perhaps maybe what we need to do, if the time is really that much changed over the period of time since Ben Franklin looked at his watch while he was in England 100+ years ago, nearly 200 years ago, you'd stop and say, maybe if it's that much changed, we need to go ahead and advance all clocks in the United States forward 1/2 hour and leave our time alone. With that having been said, I just have you just take a quick look at the Indiana lawmaker vote to study the time change, and there it indicates that by a vote of 51 to 46, they created an oversight panel to look at it. And it says only 15 of the state's 92 counties observe daylight savings time. Now, that has to be by a vote of the legislature, and is my understanding. However, it does talk about the fact that only in two other states are there changes in their clocks, and that is in Hawaii and most of Arizona. In other words, the full state of Arizona does not change its time. And what I would like to do, and I recognize that legislative counsel has maybe a little different take on this, but I'd like to have us at least hear from legislative counsel as to what our legal ability is to examine the time zone changes within the state of Oregon and perhaps give counties, perhaps certain counties, options to change or not to change under the daylight savings program, and allow that to be a bottom-up driven process, and let the counties vote on it. Now, it's been during my lifetime. People have said it was during the war, and I'm not sure which war. I've been around since Bosnia, anyway. It's been during my lifetime that I remember that Niger County at one point in time didn't change its time with the rest of Pacific or Mountain Time Zone, and we became Pacific Time for a part of the year, and then back on Mountain Time Zone for a part of the year. And I just call that to your attention because I don't want that to happen. Our economy is in Eastern Oregon, and particularly Southeastern Oregon and Niger County, is inextricably linked with the economy of the state of Idaho. Given our druthers, there are many of my constituents in Niger County that would call themselves members of the state of Idaho over the state of Oregon, but for the sales tax. And so I just give you folks that in passing, that my economy in Niger County, particularly northern Niger County, equates itself in large part with the economy of the state of Idaho. And those folks that say that they'll arrive at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and they're coming from another part of the state, usually the time is off by an hour when they get there, and that hasn't been taken into consideration. So my the amendment, which is presently given to you today, basically removes the large portion or all of the of the original bill, because the original bill dealt with Mount Hare County and that portion of Oregon which is in the Mountain Time Zone. And basically it says that the standard time would be Pacific time, and that would be it, and there would be no advancement. But again, colleagues, because the relating clause relates to the time zones here, I would encourage this Rules Committee to at least consider, as we discuss the issue of true savings of energy as it relates to moving clocks back and forth during the year, that in visiting with some of our folks from the energy community, their estimate of savings was that we may be able to save anywhere from 5%+ of the amount of energy that we are presently using by modifying our time and leaving our time in one modified zone, moving it forward basically 1 hour and leaving it forward 1 hour. However, I would leave that to your discretion, and again, I think it is something that should be studied. Indiana leads the way. I am not so proud that I would say that I wouldn't plagiarize from the folks from the legislature in Indiana. I think if it's good enough for them to stop and form a study group and look at it as to what the needs of the state are and what the potential energy savings might be. And colleagues, that, I believe, is one of the very main reasons why this issue is such an important issue to us today, because if we do not examine the issues of the time, the zones, the clocks that we're using in relationship to the actual energy consumption that we have, then I think we've abrogated our responsibility to Oregonians. So I would seriously have you at least look at the amendments and then do with this bill as you would choose to do, except that I would ask you to do this. Under all circumstances, I would have you make sure that folks in Eastern Oregon are allowed to leave their clocks on whatever the state of Idaho does. And out of this, please recognize that Eastern Oregon is where Oregon starts its day. And when you go to, we say that, remember, when you go to Western Oregon, you got to set your clock back, only we got to set it back probably 50 years when we come this way, when we see how far behind us you are with regard to some of the things that you're doing. So thank you very much. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Butler? Representative Berger, then Representative Walker.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Butler, what I'd like to ask you is, my understanding was that we actually changed time in order to help school children. Wasn't that one of the arguments, that the buses were leaving in the dark and children were left standing waiting for the bus, so that if we would fall back, then they would, it would be later in the morning and the children could be there? And then also in the spring, don't we have longer daylight hours, which would mean that we would use less energy with longer daylight hours? Somehow I'm confused. Please straighten me out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Berger, there is a faction who will say that it is for the children not to be standing in the dark. However, there's something to be said of the fact that the school children may be arriving at school and finding themselves in the dark in some cases with regard to the energy crisis which we may be facing in the state of Oregon. So, yes, there are folks who would say this keeps them from standing in the dark as they're waiting on the bus. I think that certainly is an issue which needs to be considered as part of a study as we look at this. If you said that in the spring you would move your clock forward and you left it forward, then in the fall, by the time you got to the fall, the children would not be standing in the dark on the bus in the fall, waiting for the bus in the fall time either, because they wouldn't be moving their clock back. But at one time or another, during the day, it's going to be during the normal daylight hours, even with the spring forward, fall back, you're going to have folks coming and going to work or back home in the dark. Either way we do it.
Okay.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. Representative Jensen, being a country girl and having some cows also, you started this out with cows, and I've had a few conversations with cows, and that's kind of one way. You said that we had visited about that, and I just had the question as to what did the cows say about it.
Thank you very much.
Meeting you.
Representative Walker, Chair Wilson, Representative Walker, the Cal folks would like to be able to stay on a standard time, and I think if our dairy folks were given an opportunity, they would just stay on one standard of time. But obviously, in any kind of an approach that you make relative to any study of time zones within the state of Oregon and what we should consider doing relative to our responsibility of trying to save energy in the state of Oregon, the agriculture community needs to be examined. Our interrelationship with other states which surround us, as I've indicated for the state of Idaho in relationship to Malheur County, should certainly be considered. And at this particular point, the cows aren't telling me anything except milk is the drink of Oregon, and the farmers are saying, I wish we didn't have to monkey around with our dairy schedules, continuing to move them forward and back. And in order to do that, incidentally, it's about a two-week process. What you start doing is you start milking 5 minutes earlier each morning for about a period of about, 20 days to catch up with it, and that's how you do that.
Representative Butler, I need to apologize. I said Representative Jensen. Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Warren.
Further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Legislative Counsel Greg Chamoff, would you come up, please? Representative Butler, if you need to get back to the committee.
Thank you very much.
How much wiggle room do we have?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the federal law sets the time zones for the country, where those lines are across the country, sets a standard time for each of those zones, and then gives a state the authority for whatever land lies within a particular zone to spring forward an hour into daylight savings time. So Oregon, by statute, may decide, as it has chosen to so far, to spring forward in Pacific time and to spring forward in the portion of the state that's in mountain time. But the decision can't be made by an entity smaller than the state, and you can only choose to affect the time zone as a whole, not just a part of it.
Thank you. So you say you can't make that decision in any increment smaller than the state itself. Am I right?
Mr. Chair, in any increment smaller than the zone within a state.
Zone within a state. Okay.
You can choose to have the portion of Oregon that is in Pacific time remain on standard time all year, or you can choose to have that portion of the state spring forward for daylight savings time. Mm-hmm. For the portion of the state that lies in mountain time, you can choose to leave that portion of the state in standard time all year, or you can, as current law reads, spring forward during mountain time for the daylight savings period.
All right. Okay. Very good. Any further questions? Well, thank you. We have no one else to testify on that, I presume. No one on the sheet. Okay, thank you. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3303. Mm-hmm. Committee, I'm sure all of us will want to expedite our homework on that one. And,
definitely, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We will open public hearing on HJM 28. And Representative Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bruce Starr, State Representative, House District 3. I live in Hillsborough, represent Western Washington County. Thank you for scheduling a public hearing on this bill, this memorial. I appreciate it very much. I'm here to speak in favor of HJM 28, which encourages Congress to pass the tax relief package proposed by President Bush. In the interest of the committee's time, I would like to briefly outline two very basic and fundamental reasons why I believe that we can all vote for this piece of legislation, reasons that extend across party lines. Tax cuts are about the realization of the American dream. That is something that both Democrats and Republicans are undoubtedly about. In fact, I'm interested to discover that tax cuts proposed by both Kennedy and Reagan were roughly twice and three times as big as the tax cut proposed by President Bush, and were both passed by Democrat-controlled Congresses. And I don't think that necessarily has to be any different today. The first reason, of course, is the economy. With the economy in its current unstable and delicate state, a cut in taxes would be a welcome stimulus for economic growth through increased spending and investment in the private sector. The same principle which brought about the economic boom of the 80s under Reagan's famed tax cut could apply today. A tax cut would be significant support under the pressure of layoffs that we have today, increased energy prices, and record levels of consumer debt. Secondly, I believe cutting taxes is the just thing to do. Congress has passed five major tax increases since 1981, including the tax increase in 1993. I wish that the Blazers could win with the same kind of consistency with which Congress passes taxes. In addition, the budget surplus is expected to exceed $5 trillion in the next 10 years. The proposed tax cut would take $1.6 trillion of that surplus and return it to those who have worked hard in providing bread and butter, not only for themselves, but really for the federal government. Bush's tax cut uses the money to begin restoring justice to the tax system in a number of ways. First of all, the Bush tax cut focuses on lower-income families by lowering the bottom income tax rate from 15% to 10% and doubles the per-child tax credit from $500 to $1,000. Secondly, it eliminates the death tax, which fundamentally attacks the American dream by taxing savings, family-owned businesses, and investment capital. Thirdly, the Bush tax cut provides tax relief to married couples. It simply isn't right that 21 million American couples pay higher taxes simply because they're married. This tax cut is the right thing to do. Taxation without representation. That was the rallying cry that birthed our nation, engendered from an overwhelming desire to pursue the American dream uninhibited. Underlying that fundamental idea of representation is the realization proper representatives will do away with unnecessary taxes. When Oregonians are free from the burden such as that unnecessary taxes bring, it is then they're truly released to pursue the incredible, precious American dream. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Gardner.
Just one, Mr. Chair. Representative Starr, basically, as I understand it, what you're wanting this committee to do is to, without getting into the substance of the matter, but simply to go through what will probably be more of a partisan vote, much as the way it was through Congress, to go to the floor and go through, for all the same reasons that Congress did, mostly a partisan vote, to go to the Senate to go through a partisan vote, mostly for all the same reasons Congress did, to send this memorial to seven people in Washington, D.C., five of which have already voted on it, and two of which have already stated their opinion on it. Do you really think that's a great use of our time and resources in the state legislature?
I do, in fact. I think it is important for the representatives of the people here in the state of Oregon to move issues forward, whether they be state issues that we deal with on a regular basis or even federal issues, and this, quite honestly and clearly, is one. Now, this process that we are engaged in is a political process. Process by which you have differing political parties that offer differing political points of view. The fact that we at times disagree, I don't think is unhealthy, and I think that it is one of those processes by which we govern ourselves. And while I don't intend to, and would hope that we don't necessarily have to have a long drawn out partisan vote, either here in this committee or on the House floor or Senate floor. But one that we can move this through simply and easily without, I'm not here to be in anybody's face, so to speak. I guess I'll leave it at that.
Mr. Chair, I guess my point is, for what purpose? We in the state legislature can't change what federal law is. This would really go to two people who haven't already voted on it. And I think we already know which way both of them are going to vote. Can't we just call them or send them a letter?
We could.
Any further? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up will be Daryl Howard, please. Daryl, if you have anyone with you, if you want to bring them up, you're welcome to do that. I've got Russ on the list, but I also have two that indicated they were linked with Russ in this. So I just didn't want to get too many people for two people here. So. You'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Daryl Howard with the Oregon Republican Party. Thank you, Chairman Wilson, members of the committee. I'm testifying today on behalf of Solomon Yu, Jr. He was not able to make it a couple hours ago. He had to leave on a plane for Arizona. He has submitted testimony in writing being distributed. He is the Republican National Committee man from Oregon. And he has kind of an interesting story. He was born in communist China, and Representative Starr earlier referenced the realization of the American dream, and he is truly it. As a young man, he disagreed with the theories of communism and was sent to a farm reeducation camp. His parents had been beaten severely, and he managed to escape China about 20 years ago. He knew two words, Coca-Cola and thank you. He built a business and has been a very successful business person here in the state of Oregon. And his testimony is as follows. Chairman Wilson and members of the committee, I come before you today to urge your support and passage of House Joint Memorial 28. This memorial requests our congressional delegation to support President Bush's $1.6 trillion tax cut proposal. There are many reasons to support this tax cut plan, but the greatest one, in my mind, is the principle, in a free society, the government must return to the people what is rightfully theirs. It is indeed a privilege for me to present my opinion to you today. You see, I was born and raised in communist China. Before I came to this great country, I worked in a Chinese pharmacy 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, and was paid the equivalent of $30 a month. You can say the communist government took 99.9999% of the fruits of my labor. I was, in fact, an economic slave of the government because I did not control my own destiny. If I expressed a desire to keep more money in a society which tried to achieve economic equality among its citizens, I could disappear in the night. To me, a desire to keep more of our hard-earned money is not only an issue about who really owns the fruits of our labor, but also an issue of being a free man in a free society. How free are we if the government takes away more than 50% of our earnings? Some in Congress are using class warfare rhetoric to oppose President Bush's tax cut proposal. I have heard these slogans before in communist China. If they succeed, the land of the free would be moved further, closer towards the kind of society from which I escaped. I believe nobody in this room who believes in freedom thinks it is acceptable for the government to take the majority of our earnings. To me, demanding a refund from our overcharged tax bill is also an ethical issue. I believe nobody in this room would disagree with me that when your neighborhood supermarket overcharges you, you should demand a refund. If you would not let your neighborhood supermarket get by without a refund, why should you let your government? Finally, this tax cut could not have come at a better time for our hardworking citizens and, by extension, our economy. The Dow Jones is below 10,000 and the NASDAQ is less than 2,000, and I might add in that it was down another 215 points is about half hour before closing today, and the NASDAQ was down another 26. We're facing an economic slowdown. As a result, our hardworking taxpayers are forced to cut back on spending for our personal needs. As a government for the people, It is the responsible course of action to act in the best interest of our people by reducing the tax burden. Chairman Wilson and members of the committee, I strongly urge you to join our president to free our hardworking taxpayers from the current tax burden, remove the shackles from our sluggish economy by passing this memorial. This tax cut proposal is no longer a Republican issue or a Democrat issue. It is an issue of doing the right thing for our people. Our people and our economy need not only this tax cut proposed by our president, but the renewed confidence in our government as an entity that honors the principle of giving back when too much has been taken from us. If you have any questions, please feel free to call me. And I thank you for this opportunity, and God bless our free country. Solomon Yu, Jr.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up, Russ Walker, please. And Russ, if you want to bring some guests, if you have some with you, that would be great. Thank you.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, Russ Walker. I'm the director, Oregon director of Citizens for Sound Economy. We're a national organization with offices in 12 states, and we've been on been working on public policy on a national level for well over almost 20 years, actually. I have prepared testimony. On behalf of our 8,000 members here in the state of Oregon, we urge you to vote in favor of HJM 28. We thank Representative Starr for submitting this piece of legislation at our request. We're grateful for the opportunity to be here today to testify. I brought with me some individuals from around the state of Oregon who care deeply about tax cuts, who would like to say a few words when I'm finished about how this tax cut will help them and their families, and how they benefit from the assistance they'll receive from this cut. Over the past 3 months, CSE, along with others here in the state of Oregon, have been traveling the state, visiting with your constituents, and we have met with well over 1,000 of your constituents around the state, from areas as different as Portland to Medford, Astoria, Ontario. And in the next 2 weeks, we will visit Coos Bay, Bend, and Albany, as well as other cities. In every single city we stop at, we find the same thing. People are hungering for tax cuts. They feel that they are not receiving enough for what they pay in taxes. And due to the fact that over the past 20 years, they have not received a significant tax cut and have experienced the burden of five tax increases, they feel that this tax cut is not only due to them, but is that the government has a responsibility to restore some of their hard-earned money back to them. Let me continue here. Given the slowing economy, a tax cut would give America a pro-growth boost it needs. And with record budget surpluses amassing in Washington, D.C., the time has never been better for tax cuts. CSE enthusiastically supports the full $1.6 trillion package developed by the Bush administration. This proposal calls for just about half of the existing $3.1 trillion of non-Social Security surplus dollars to be returned to the taxpayers. This is a conservative plan that accounts for possible fluctuations in the size of the surplus. Cutting marginal rates means that every American who pays taxes would get tax relief. All working Americans deserve a tax cut, and Washington shouldn't pick winners or losers. Or, as Democrat Senator Zell Miller says, quote, play eeny, meeny, miny, moe, unquote. President Bush's plan would condense the current five tax rates into four lower ones, thereby cutting everyone's taxes and inviting economic growth and prosperity. And I will add to that, that as a result of this tax cut, the lowest rate, which was paying 15% of their income in taxes, will now pay 10% of their income in taxes. And in addition to that, of the lowest rate, one out of every five of those tax-paying Americans will be removed from the tax rolls. which equates out to about 7 million households nationwide. Now, I believe that's real tax. That's real tax reform, and that is real help to those who need it the most, those who are at the bottom of our society that are struggling to make it. Additionally, the death tax is unfair and un-American. The overwhelming majority of Americans agree that this is fundamentally wrong to tax earnings at death that have already been taxed previously. Furthermore, the death tax punishes the American values of saving and investing by preventing individuals from passing their property along to their family. The president's plan would completely eliminate the death tax. And I will add to that that 70% of businesses today never make it to the second generation. That means after working their entire life to build something, to do what is right, to invest in their community, to save, to work hard, 70% of those individuals do not pass it on. And a big reason for that is the death tax. The marriage penalty is yet another example of the federal government punishing American values and tradition. The penalty occurs when dual-income couples are taxed at a higher rate than if they had filed when they filed jointly than if they had filed individually. President Bush's plan would allow second earners to deduct up to $3,000 from their overall tax burden, thus greatly reducing the impact of the marriage penalty. Also, by condensing and lowering taxes, Bush's plan would negate the effects of the penalty for many married couples. The president's proposal is right for America and for Oregon. Supporting HJM 28 will tell our congressional delegation and the voters of Oregon that our state legislature recognizes the importance and fairness and the need for meaningful tax relief for all Oregonians and all taxpayers. I hope you will join CSE and the majority of Americans by supporting the Bush plan. And I want to go ahead and just share with you three examples of what this tax relief will mean to Oregonians. We ran the numbers, our organization, along with an organization called the Tax Foundation, which is affiliated with a CSE in Washington, D.C., ran the numbers. A single school teacher in the state of Oregon, these are in the state of Oregon, with two children, with a mean salary of $43,789 a year, currently carries a federal tax burden of $3,266 a year. The federal tax burden under the Bush plan, $1,766 a year. That's a refund or a return to that individual, that single school teacher, single mother with two children, $1,500 a year. That's real tax relief. A married police officer with one child, medium salary in the state of Oregon is $35,665 a year. Current federal tax burden is $2,405 a year. Federal tax burden under the Bush plan, $1,305 a year. That's a savings of $1,100 a year. A married couple with two children with a medium salary of $40,321 a year. Current federal tax burden is $2,168 a year. And under the Bush plan, they would pay $568 a year, savings of $1,600 a year. Those are real Oregon wages. And those are the real numbers, not the numbers with the foggy math, not the numbers with smoke and mirrors. Those are how real Oregonians will benefit from the Republican tax plan, the Bush tax plan. We strongly urge you to support it. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them, and I'll let others testify.
Thank you. We've got a fairly healthy sign-up list today, so I would just ask those who are going to testify today to please keep that brief for us. Appreciate that. All right. Who next? And whoever is next, would you identify yourself?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, committee, Al Farley from Springfield, Oregon. And I think that our tax base is way too high, and I'm in favor of this Bush giving us a tax break. And I know that it's good for the economy because now if I get more money, I'm going to spend the money. But if I don't get money back, I'm on a tight budget, and that's how I'm going to stay. I'm not going to spend the money. So I think it's good for the economy now that it's going down. I'm going to, with the Bush tax cut, I'll have more money, and I'll feel like spending it.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Susana Aguilar Rice, and I'm here from Eugene, Oregon. I'm here to speak on behalf of the tax cut. I'm here to speak on behalf of the people that I dealt with for 14 years when I was the owner of Intercultural Services. A lot of the people that I dealt with are people below these figures that Mr. Russell expressed to you. These are people that are making under $10,000 per year. The tax cut means a lot to them, even if it is in a small amount of under $200. For when you are in that category, when you are part of that working poor that works not one but two jobs to put food on the table and to have housing and that is unable to get socialized assistance living because they don't happen to be one of those that have opted and chose not to work. To them, that means something. I was a resident of Alaska back in the 1980s when Alaska needed to distribute the monies that they had from the oil revenues. And I saw it for a first-hand experience how the citizens and the residents of Alaska, by getting that monies back, which at the time was about $1,000 for the first year, and it gradually went down, all of those monies went back into the economy, into the Alaskan economy. People paid off their debts. People bought things that they needed, and it was invested locally. Also, part of this tax is part of this program is in reference to the debt tax. Being married to a fifth-generation Oregonian, I know firsthand what happens when businesses and when land is unable to pass on to your heirs because the debt tax penalty is such. Back in the 1950s, when the old pioneer Abner Rice in Douglas County passed away, he had no means to provide a will, or he made no provisions to pass on the lands to the heirs. My father-in-law, who is now deceased, and two other brothers, they were forced to go and cut timber in order to pay the debt taxes, and as a consequence, most of those lands are no longer in the hands of the Rices down there. This is something that needs to be resolved. It's been over 50 years, and we still have the same penalty debt taxes. This is something that you, as our representative, you need to look into this. And in terms of the marriage tax also, this is something that we need to look at. It is an insult to our elderly, the people that we have to look up to, the people that represent the values, when we have a lot of elderly living together because they don't want to be penalized by being married. That is part of the instruction that government has on the family and the breakdown of the family. So I ask you to please support this tax cut. We need it. The people need it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Cheryl Clifford. I'm from Springfield, Oregon. I thank Mr. Starr for what he's doing here today. I support what he's doing. And when I listened to Mr. Gardner talk about only two people, I kind of felt like he's telling me I should give up and not try. And it kind of repels me a little bit.
Mr. Chair, if I first of all, let me make a couple things clear. Honestly, I don't believe there's probably a member of this committee that isn't in favor of a tax cut on the federal level to some degree. There'd probably be disagreements about how to go about a tax cut. What I'm saying is this is a federal issue that we're bringing into the state legislature. Are you generally in favor of not wasting government money?
Yes, I am, but I want to make sure that Washington, D.C. knows that Oregon supports the Bush bill, and that there's plenty of support here. Anyway, I can be heard. I'm sorry, I'm for it. I'm suffering from not feeling heard at the moment. I'm suffering from being overtaxed at the moment. I grew up poor. I was overtaxed. I'm middle class now. I'm still being overtaxed. I didn't like it when I was poor. I don't like it now. There's a lot of things about this Bush bill that is obviously good, and I'm glad if you all support it. I hear the references regarding how the rich are going to benefit, and that sounds a bit Marxist to me, and that disturbs me. I don't like playing class against class, and I'm hearing a lot of that. In the past, the Democrats wanted to use the so-called surplus for spending programs, and they talked as though that surplus was there, a sure fact, for a long time. Now that the Republicans have finally stopped trying to say, hey, it's only projected, we're all fine, we'll talk about as though it's there, but we're going to give it back to the people. Now the Democrats are saying, hey, it's only projected, we shouldn't be doing this. Well, regardless, the plans that Bush has and as to how to use this money is much more American to me. I feel like we're moving towards socialism more and more, and that this Bush step is just a drop in the bucket in the right direction. It's a small step forward in the face of many steps backwards. And I am for this memorial. And I know it seems like a very small thing, but I am for it.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair and of the committee, thank you. I'm Sandy Reed. I'm from the Republican Party of Eugene, or the Republic of Eugene, I guess what you call them, People's Republic. This is where Jim Johnson won't let us have Christmas trees. Anyway, I like Bush because it makes common sense, and we do not take it out of the Social Security surplus. I'm on Social Security, and I checked it out, and I know. If you think about it, God only asked 10%. Government asked for 4 months. Okay? Kennedy helped the economy. Reagan helped the economy by tax cuts. And now Bush is doing the same thing. Is it not we, the people? You know, government's supposed to work for us, but government so far is making us work for them. Because of high taxes, it seems that we have many mothers that are forced to work for their to keep their families, and according that's about 5.16 million. So I really support this tax, and I really think you have to think about it seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. Russ, anything? Okay, thanks very much. Next up will be Jim Henson, please. Could you identify yourself, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Henson. I reside at 5916 Sunbrook in Lake Oswego, and I rise in favor of HJM 28. And kind of looking forward to this. I want to share this, my perspective on this, from a person that 20 years ago was a stockbroker. I went to Beaverton High and then Oregon State University, and when I graduated, I got a job with E.F. Hutton. And my dad just about killed me because he thought stockbroking was one of the rottenest professions on earth. Nobody had made any money in about 10, 15 years. And it was a fantastic time to be a stockbroker in hindsight. The last 20 years has been tremendous. And I was there. I started in February of 1980. I was there during the Reagan tax cuts and when that took hold, and then the effect that that had on the Federal Reserve. And I don't want to go into a lot of the base, the details of that simply because I know that other people have talked about it, and I don't want to waste a lot of time here. But I do want to cover a couple of things that that we need to think about in terms of what this tax cut will do or could do that really haven't been talked about. Number one, we've got to be careful about paying off the national debt too quickly. We're really in a situation right now where if the economy remotely holds where it is, in a very short period of time, we could pay off the entire national debt. Now, the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States is set up to try to control interest rates and control the economy. And one of the best mechanisms they have is making purchases of treasury bills in the open market. What they can do is they can quite quickly change the price of money in the market, and it's a very effective tool. If there is no debt, they can't do it. It takes away one of the tools. And Greenspan's testimony that he did in January talked about this problem, that we don't want to be too overzealous in paying off the debt. We're going to get it paid off, right? It's going to happen. But we don't want to do it too quickly because we'll lose control at the Federal Reserve level. Number two, you know, I really want to talk about the class thing here in Oregon just for a minute, how the Reagan tax cut really affected people, because they see in the popular press people saying that the poor really hasn't been benefited by the Reagan cuts, or for that matter, the Kennedy cuts in the early 60s. And I really, you know, you hear the whole statement about liars, figures, you know, lie and all that. What I see is that poor people that I really worked with as a stockbroker, people who are trying to really, with very small amounts of money, trying to build something over the decades of the 80s, really benefited more than just having an income. I mean, I just read a figure that said 50% of high school or of college students have cell phones right now. 50% of college students. It's actually cheaper for them to have their own cell phone and get long distance. I mean, I was a college student once, and believe me, I was very, very poor at the time. And there's all kinds of benefits in terms of personal computers, air travel. When I went to Amsterdam in 1979, to go on a trip hitchhiking in Europe, I paid $425 for my ticket to Amsterdam. And would you believe it's the same today after, you know, 20 years of inflation? This is all largely because investors lost their fear of investing and drove down prices of things that really help poor people. It drove down the costs over time. So finally, I want to talk about another thing that's probably important. I would like to sort of target this, if I could, at certain people of the community, and I'll look at them so that they know who they are. Remember, as we lower the federal taxes, what's going to happen to the tax revenue in the state of Oregon? It's going to rise. Now, we have projects here that I would love to help. I mean, Richard Devlin, in a column that was in the Oregonian just the other day, talked about Oregon Project Independence, things that we'd really like to fund. By having the feds cut their rate, we actually get more revenue in the state of Oregon. And frankly, I'd rather have us have the money, because I think we can do a better job of spending it here in Oregon than them in Washington, D.C. On my little handheld GPS, I figured out which was closer, Washington, D.C. or Siberia. And Siberia is actually closer than Washington, D.C. So anyway, finally, you know, I want to address just the issue of, you know, where we are in this state with regard to partisan issues. At one time, I had this vision in the state, and maybe it was a dream, maybe it was real, but I remember that we used to be the tail that wagged the dog in the state. We were the place that thought of ideas first, because we were a small state. We didn't have 94 representatives in Washington, D.C., where we would come up with ideas. We'd do things that were kind of out of the box, new and different, and everybody in the nation got excited about it, right? And that's why I feel it's important for all of us together in this state to send a message to Washington. It doesn't cost us anything except the paper to do. And it isn't taking that much time, because nobody here is being paid by the hour. So thank you very much for your consideration on this, and I'd really appreciate if you pass this memorial, and it would certainly be a lot of fun. I think and everybody would gain kudos for doing it. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, though, I would like to state it does cost money to do things like this. There's not a doubt in the world that it does.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, next up will be, Steve Lanning. Excuse me, Steve Lanning, Oregon AFL-CIO.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Lanning, and I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO. I looked on the sign-up sheet. I think I'm the only one that's in the opposition category there. Anyway, we represent 175,000 working men and women in the state, and in case anyone is interested, about 27% of our membership is Republican. We urge you to oppose House Joint Memorial 28 because we think it's basically a tax cut for the rich. Our national organization and our state organization have both taken positions and have spelled out exactly what kind of tax proposals they would support, and this doesn't even come close. We think that this proposal rewards the richest 1% of taxpayers with somewhere between 22 and 45% of its tax benefits, while leaving the poorest 60% of taxpayers with less than 13% of the benefits. I've included a table that we've got from the New York Times, and it's from an organization called Citizens for Tax Justice, and I know that there's been a number of tables that have been in newspapers about who gets what percent of the tax cut, and this pretty much points to what all of them say. Those at the top get the biggest percent of the tax cuts, and that's why we're opposed to it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony. I do think the last person here to testify is Carol Bobo. And that's fine. I'll have you in after her. Thank you.
Chair Wilson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Carol Bobo from Oregon City. I'm here at the request of Becky Miller to represent Oregon Taxpayers United. Oregon Taxpayers United supports this resolution, and we urge that you pass it out to the full House. Over the past 2 days, considerable news coverage has been given to the study requested by legislative leadership showing who in Oregon is paying taxes. This study shows that taxes are the most regressive and a real burden on Oregonians' lower income brackets. President Bush's tax relief proposal will provide its greatest level of tax relief to this very group of taxpayers. What we need to do is send the message to Washington, D.C. that Oregon is in favor of President Bush's tax cuts. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. You're next. Identify yourself, please.
Yes, I'm Lee Williams from Lake Oswego. I am a Republican. But I would hope that the local Democrats are as not an entrenched in partisan politics as Washington, D.C. is. There is a time to say that we are in favor of giving tax relief to the people. And I think there's a number in the Democratic Party that would desire that same kind of relief and fairness in our tax code. And I would hope that this resolution would give you an opportunity to reach out to your constituents here in Oregon to say to them that we do want to see you be able to spend your own money. I really resent what's going on in Washington, D.C. with the comparison of who gets what back, because I think most of us are smart enough to know that if you pay a higher percentage of taxes, you're going to get a higher percentage back. If this tax cut actually passes, and if one in five of the lowest incomes will pay zero taxes, will the Democrats come out with the argument that those at the bottom will get no tax relief? Well, of course they'll get no tax relief. They're not paying any taxes. So I think that this kind of partisan comparison is not healthy for our country, and I would hope that the Democratic Party would start rising above this kind of pitting one American against another American, and that the opportunity for those who are very generous to the poor in donations and tax-exempt type charities would be rewarded for their generosity rather than being punished because they make more. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I have no one else on the sign-up sheet. Anyone else here to testify? Okay, thank you. I will close the public hearing on HJM 28. I'll open a work session on HJM 28.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
I move HJM 28 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Starr moves HJM 28 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Do we have discussion? Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know this has sounded like a particularly partisan discussion in terms of perhaps the witnesses before us, but I'd like to indicate one thing, and that is that I think that no administration, and actually obviously no Congress, can take full credit for the economy. But one of the reasons I believe that we are in this position of having a tax cut proposal before us is because of the sound fiscal practices of the prior administration. And I hope that the current administration follows through with those practices. But along those same lines, if it wasn't for the administration that was there, if it was a different administration, I think I'd be taking the same position on this. Given the fiscal position that we're in, and given the estimates of what our revenues will be, I believe it's prudent to give Americans some type of tax cut. Now, I might not pick a tax cut exactly like the Bush administration's tax cut, but to use a phrase that's often used in this building, it's the only one that currently has wings. Now, this may face a closer vote, obviously, in the Senate, and both of our senators have already indicated their position. And actually, all of our congressional people have already voted. So, but with that, I will be voting for the measure. But should that measure fail, I would still urge that there be some type of tax cut for all Americans. But this is the one that has swings.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
I would certainly say that it's not that I'm not in favor of a tax cut. I think we do need tax relief for the citizens of the United States, and certainly for working men and women. The question is whether it's this tax relief or not. And I would just simply say that I don't believe in this state legislative body bringing federal issues that are being argued is appropriate. We are wasting taxpayers' dollars by sending this memorial to Congress, if we in fact do. I think it's very clear and evident. It costs us money to print this. It costs us money to send it out. It costs money for every hour that this building is used and every staff person that works here or works on any issue such as this. And I think that if we want responsible and responsive government in the state of Oregon, we should not be entering into federal issues debates here, especially since half of Congress or the House has already dealt with the issue. The Senate, I mean, whether one likes it or not, this will go to two people who have not voted on it that may or may not have a chance to vote on it. And I think it's much cheaper to spend 35 cents and send them a letter than spending the state's time and energy and effort on it.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As an elected official, I've been elected 6 times to government service. And I think that I believe so deeply in the democratic process. President Bush was declared the winner. I would have loved an opportunity today to offer my support to President Bush as our president, everyone's president. He is the president of the United States of America. And I think that in the democratic process, always people lose and always people win. And those winners have a right to that respect. I have to tell you that I am disappointed, however, that something would be brought into our body that would be divisive. We have worked so well in this legislative session, and I think this opens a door, not because of the tax plan. I, perhaps, if you had given me an opportunity to sign, might support the Bush tax plan and be happy to sign it. But I do believe the discussion and the rhetoric that will be brought into our legislative body will somehow taint some of the hard work that we have ahead of us for the state of Oregon and for the people in it, whether it is our poor, our children, our seniors, and I am disturbed by that. I'm happy to give you a courtesy vote if you want it to go to the floor, but I have to tell you that I would have been much happier had this been brought to us and circulated that we all signed and as many as wanted to in this legislative body. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Further discussion. Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a former broadcaster, I've spent most of my life defending First Amendment rights. And what I hear today is that even the legislature has First Amendment rights. We have a right to speak and to represent the people of this state to the federal government. That's part of our job. And so I certainly will endorse this HJM 28 and proudly do so.
Thank you. Further discussion? Thank you. Jennifer, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative March?
Excuse.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Aye. Motion carries, and Representative Starr, you would be the carrier there. Thank you. We have no further business. Committee adjourned.